Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Here we are. It's Friday night, so it's the Hour of Truth. This is the State Sovereignty Hour. I'm Dave, brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here every Friday and Saturday at 7. We missed last week. I had a little family emergency, and we played some best of. Unfortunately, I had originally scheduled tonight's second hour guest, Mike Slack, for last week to try to get a 2-hour lead time on the Go Green Self-Reliance Rally. We'll be talking with him about that in the 8 o'clock hour. For now, it's been a busy week. The state legislators who are working on the Convention of States met in Indianapolis. They're traveling home now. We won't be talking to Mike Moon likely this week, as he's on the road and headed home from that meeting. We'll be getting an update on that meeting. I do want to remind you folks, especially all you folks in Lawrence County, Mike will be doing another meet and greet in Aurora. Go to MikeMoonForMissouri.com or go to Mike Moon's Facebook page to find out the exact location. That thing will start at 5:30. I went to the last one. It was exceptional. I was a little disappointed by the crowd. You folks in Lawrence County need to get busy. This is where the fight is. I'm telling you people out there who are Republicans now, I talk and talk and talk with my friends who are lifelong Republicans who say they want to try to save their party from within. I don't see a lot of that try to save my party from within, because this right here, Lawrence County, Missouri, is where that fight is. And I don't see a lot of feet. I don't see a lot of money. I don't see a lot of time and energy being spent on saving your party. Here's what's happened. Mike Moon introduced an articles of impeachment against the governor, the one that really stood out, the one that really had legs, the one article of impeachment that specifically had weight against the governor of this state. That article of impeachment called the governor to task for reneging on his constitutional duty, his specific constitutional duty, to fill without delay the vacant seats in the legislature. Some people in Missouri have been unrepresented in the Missouri legislature for over a year because the governor has failed in his responsibility to issue writs of election to fill those seats. That is an impeachable offense. That is a dereliction, a gross dereliction of duty. Now, because Mike Moon filed those articles of impeachment, the political elite in Jefferson City are behind a primary challenge to him. And I'm not talking about the Democrats being behind a primary challenge. I am talking about Republicans are behind a primary challenge to a liberty-loving, Constitution-loving representative. Those people in Lawrence County elected Mike Moon wisely to go to Jefferson City. He stood as one of the few in the House of Representatives, not the only, but one of the few in the House of Representatives who believes in liberty above politics, who believes in the Constitution of this state above politics. And because of those stands, your party, my brothers and sisters who are Republicans, is trying to unseat him. Because he stands for liberty, the Republican Party is trying to unseat him. He doesn't play the game. He doesn't play the Republican game. They've mounted a name-recognized opponent. They're pouring money into that. This opponent is doing nothing but relying on name recognition and rallying Democrats to cross in our open primary and help unseat Mike Moon. Now, you Republicans out there listening who are serious about wanting to change your party from within better wake up to the fact that this is the kind of thing you're talking about. This is the kind of race that you need to be involved in. This is the race you need to be sending money to. This is the race you need to be spending time on. This is the race you need to be talking to people about. Lawrence County, it's going to matter how much vote you get out, because you are fighting against a wide variety of usual non-voters. On your ticket. The Democrat is not going to win in Lawrence County. So this Republican primary is going to determine who your representative is. Will you stick with the guy who believes in liberty, who believes in the Constitution, or will you let the Republican establishment take this thing back? I'm telling you right now, in any battle, minor victories count. But this is something you can bank on in any battle. And Mike Moon was a minor victory. Getting Mike Moon to Washington or to Jefferson City was, for liberty-minded patriots, a minor victory. I mean, we're still overwhelmingly outnumbered in the House of Representatives. But one at a time, but count on this in every battle. When you gain a little ground, the enemy will fight double hard to take that ground back. That's what's going on here. Your party is sending you a message, Tea Partiers, 912ers, Right to Lifers, honest, Constitution-loving, liberty-loving Republicans. Your party is sending you a message with this primary. Where are you? The we started about 6 weeks ago with a $1 million message, and I'm not going to try at this point in time to let you know how dismayed I am about your lack of either understanding or willingness to get involved here. What's wrong? I mean, have we become that apathetic? Have we become that beaten? Have you? You're talking to a fence post when you talk to me. I've told you at the start that I didn't think you could change your party from within. I'm beginning to wonder if you really wanna. Now, here's a chance to stand up to your party and say no. We need you to send $10 to Lawrence County to make this thing work. Every one of you, $10. Okay, I said it's been a busy week. We're going to move on. The governor has issued what may be, I haven't looked back yet to see exactly, but what may be a record number of vetoes, vetoing every one of the special tax exemptions that were products of the last frenzied week of the legislative session. The governor is correct. These tax breaks were... Hello?
Yeah, this is Keith. Go right on ahead.
Hey, Keith, how are you, buddy?
Hey, doing fantastic. Just thought I'd listen in and see what's going on tonight.
Well, what's going on there? What's going on in the Convention of the States, Keith? Tell us about it.
Well, yesterday and today... We had at least 33 states represented at the what used to be called the Mount Vernon Conference. It's called Legislative Assembly, I believe. They renamed it and got quite a bit done yesterday and then today. And I'd say those folks that were there, you know, were on their way home pretty early. And I know Mike was there, Mike Moon, Ed Emery, I believe Senator Wallingford, and Senator Holzman. I didn't ever find out for sure whether Paul Kirtland was able to attend or not. I talked to him Saturday night, and he was kind of in limbo. So I hope he got it to attend because I think it went really well. It was live on streamed off the Indiana State House website, and it was just in my way of thinking, it was really monumental in some regards. I mean, they really got along and did well.
Did you catch the whole thing? Now, I caught minutes of it here and there.
Get it all, but I got most of it. I watched it all today. It wasn't that difficult because it didn't last that long today. But
right.
Just lots of just good information. And it was just really just nice to see folks from throughout the country dealing with the issues that we've seen people say that leaders today can't deal with. You know, we just don't have George Washington, we don't have Thomas Jefferson and all that, but we do have some folks who are really working hard to get this moved down the road.
Did they set a time for their next meeting?
I'm sure it'll be published. I'm pretty sure it's going to be in Atlanta. I didn't catch all of that. I haven't seen it on the website. I guess I probably should have called that up. I'm pretty sure that
That
was something I saw today, but I didn't get a chance to look at everything. I was trying to catch up from being on the road. I myself was at the Convention of States with several state leaders in Virginia most of this week and put together some plans for that. Everything we've done up till now, we've done basically what we've done up to now has been pre-season. We really didn't have a plan. We just had...
Right.
You know, some folks in various states, all volunteers, pulling together. And so really what we've been able to accomplish up till now has been, some people would call it, it's all pregame. And so when you've got three states before you start, that's in a lot of way of thinking, that's very encouraging, really.
Okay, so 30 states attended attended this conference in Indianapolis. 33?
I believe 33, yeah. I posted it today, and there's actually I just restarted my computer, so it'll take a couple minutes, but they have a new website, and if you go to Grassroots Radio, if you go to Facebook page for Grassroots, I know I pasted that.
Yeah.
I know I put that information on there, but there's a nice map that shows, I mean, virtually there's several, obviously there's several states that are in session, three or four, and I think Kentucky and Iowa, as I saw it, were the only ones I noticed right off that, you know, I'm sure there's other states that are, obviously there's some that's not represented, but when you look at it, you think, well, you know, there was almost the whole country was there, what it looked like to me.
Yeah. The Assembly of Legislatures.org.
That's it. I wanted to get that. And that was where I was headed. That was June 12th and 13th, and in Indianapolis, and they haven't. I don't see anything here about the next meeting. They just haven't updated it. They just barely got adjourned and got this one over with. But
right.
Officially called the Assembly of State Legislatures, and the reason I think that makes a lot of sense, as legislators, individuals, face election, they come and go. This is an assembly of the actual state legislatures, and so the legislature itself will send delegates to this assembly, and they really today made it very clear. They're very aware that, you know, there's nothing here that's official. This is an assembly to make recommendations for a time when there is a convention of states.
Right.
And each state that was invited had opportunity to send three. We had obviously more than that, but they still worked together in some of these cases for one state, one vote on several issues. I saw that happen today a little bit. But it's just nice to see folks get started and the number of states involved. And there was, you know, more on the opposing party. You might say there were more Democrats there this time, and their goal is to make this assembly look like America. I don't know if you heard
right.
any part of that, but they encouraged each other, first of all, to get on the phone and make sure that there's representatives from every state there this next time. And, you know, men, women, every ethnic group, we want this assembly to look like America. And there's really nothing going to come out of an Article 5 convention if it's not bipartisan, really common sense, and then needed. I mean, there's that's just the fact of the when you do the math, that's how it's going to come down.
Yeah, what's going to really surprise a lot of people is to find out us folk over here on the right, I'm not talking, of course, about the very far right nor the very far left, but the majority of people, Democrats and Republicans, all have a vested interest in limiting the federal government.
Absolutely.
There's, yeah.
Illinois, I know I have a person from that I got to know very well, a state leader and convention of states from Illinois. And her pitch to her legislators is they get back about 56 cents on the dollar of what they're a debtor. I mean, they get back 50 cents on every dollar they contribute. And at least, you know, both houses controlled by Democrats, one with three-fifths, the other one with a supermajority. And they're not looking at this the same way we are, as in terms of a convention for the. But there are some things. There are some common ground. I dare
right.
say there are some amendments that could be passed in a number of just in weeks, really. But they have to be proposed, and some think that, you know, some type of balanced budget amendment with some real teeth in it, something like Well, much more than Mark Levin has in his book. You know, Lloyd Sloan has some ideas, and he's exactly right. A balanced budget by itself, without being written. I mean, these men are already, they're aware of that, and they're, the discussion's off on the side. They know that, but there are some things that would be, I think, able to be ratified in a number of weeks if states decided that, you know, there needs to be single subject bills in the U.S. Congress. And I mean with some teeth in it. There's no reason for a bill to be 4 pages and then have 192 pages of pork and garbage and then leave it, you know, or several thousand pages, and then when you get it, you have to vote at 11:30 on the second to the last day of the session. And so it's, you know, you hold your nose and vote. That's no way to run a business, and that's no way to run a government.
We could work on that single subject bill in Missouri.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to have one, and we go around it. I mean, I think, you know, we're supposed to have a semblance of one, and it has more teeth maybe in it than it once did. But you're right; it needs to be strengthened even more because, as Mike said, you get to the end and they're putting things on it that can't stand on its own merit. And give it, what, 30, you know, 3 minutes to read an amendment of, I don't remember how many pages. It's the same principle. No question about it.
Yep.
But I looked at the map there. When you look at the map, you know, you take 50 states and you take, well, there's 33 that are represented. And then you have 17 that are not. Hawaii, Mississippi, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey. I mean, they're all the same. They're all up there.
Yeah.
In the same neighborhood, and they were invited. But, I mean, you take Washington to Florida, Texas to Maine, you know, everybody else except Illinois, New York, and California, I don't believe had anybody there, it looks like, because they're in session and they didn't take, you know, obviously it was difficult, but. So they do have another meeting planned, and it's they're just moving along bit by bit. And I got a kick out of one senator, and I don't remember where he was from. I'm thinking it was from Florida, but he says, you know, we're going to have to get out there and let the people know about this. And I said to myself, well, that's what Convention of States is trying to do. We're dedicated to having a grassroots organization in every House district in 40 states. Now, that's not going to happen, but if we get our goal of 3/4 of the House districts in 38 to 40 states, we're, you know, that's the reason that this has never happened before. There's never been a grassroots push, an organized grassroots push for this in an organized way. And I think no matter what Congress does, you know, we're going to push forward to have this convention, and you know that's exactly what we're headed for.
How ironic is it, Keith, that as I look at the map, the states that did not attend are concentrated in the area of the country that originated this limited federal government.
Somebody told me. Yesterday, a good friend of mine said that 80% of the citizens in the country are polled are not happy with the way our government's going. However,
oh, yeah.
If you take and poll the people in the Beltway,
right,
and I would dare say some of the states that we're talking about are right there in the Beltway, are pretty tied to it, except for Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and you know Rhode Island up there, they're hanging. And I think Rhode Island, by the way, was they had delegates there, so it was maybe Connecticut didn't have it.
Right.
But 80% of the people in the Beltway think that government's doing just fine, and the point is that it's doing just fine for them.
Yep.
It's absolutely doing real fine for them, and it's not working at all for the people out here outside the Beltway with 47% of the people on some type of assistance. Now, that number, I was told by another close friend that we have to be careful using that number, but that because that does include Social Security, and that includes people who have paid into that system. And so that's not like we put all those together in the same basket, and that's probably not completely accurate to do that. But nevertheless, that's people who are taking money out of the basket, and there's a lot more people in the wagon that's pulling the wagon, that's for sure. It's going to be.
Well, it's it's important, though, to differentiate, as you've said, that, you know, the Social Security and because the Democrats will try to use those people against sound fiscal policy. They are always playing the Republicans want to end Social Security. Republicans want to take away your Medicare. Republicans want to take away your that game. So it's important. It's important to count those people in, I believe, as part of the part of the folks who are a target in this who's living off the government game.
Right. And there is just, you know, what seems to me to be unreasonable. There's got to be some testing, some indexing. There are folks who don't need to be. I mean, those folks who are making, and I don't know what the figure is, but and I know even if you've paid in and said, well, fair is fair, but call it patriotic, call it common sense. To me, I mean, I just have some people that I know in my family. They say we don't need that. We don't need that. And so there's a lot of folks I know that are a lot better off than they are. So
right.
When that system was sold as an insurance, it was a Ponzi scheme from the first day. And I know some folks who their dad, when he got his check, or he got his letter that said he was going to get X amount of dollars every month, he hadn't paid anything in. And he said,
right.
That's not my money. I don't deserve that. And the longest time, you know, his family, he tried to say, well, you know, if you don't, it's there. But he was convinced that, you know, that he hadn't paid anything anywhere close to that amount in. And if they'd have fixed the system where it was stayed where it was designed to stay, the whole idea of retirement is a European idea. And so this system was set up to when people, the average age people live to, well, when it should have been indexed and should have followed that all along, if anybody of any integrity and common sense was running it all along. But no, they've waited until people are retiring and then living another 25 or 30 years. You know, I don't know what the average age is, but there's just absolutely no way that it's going to work, and it's on borrowed time right now.
Okay, so they're going to meet at Atlanta next. We had 33 states showed up. We need 34, by the way, listeners, to call a convention. 34 states have to adopt a resolution calling for a convention of states for it to actually happen.
Well, if I'm looking at 33, that map on the Assembly of State Legislatures.org is a pretty handy tool.
Yeah.
You can see that we've got to have Mississippi and Iowa. Pennsylvania's got lots of conservatives in it, even though it goes, you know, either way. But I think the point is we're looking to put together an organization. You know, I have a friend that says, well, you know, your end result, you're just looking as the convention of states as being the end, and that's the furthest of the truth, because this organization that we're hoping to put together, and we're going to work hard to put together in every district, it's going to be important when it comes time to select these delegates to this convention. I mean, the selection of delegates, they work today on some rules that they're going to propose, and but basically they're leaving it to each state to make the selection.
Well, yeah, so, they have to do that,
obviously. But I mean, they talked about trying to at least propose rules where former federal officials and federal employees, and they even after they had all that together, I believe it failed just for the very reason that you just said. It really should be left up to the states, that sovereign entities, to make their own decisions. You can't, put a rule over it and say, well, you can pick your own delegates, but then you can't put these in. That's not the same. That's not allowing for the sovereignty
right.
of the state. But if you look at that map, you can give you a pretty good indication. Even though there's representatives from Maine there, I don't know. They may be. I don't know what that'll be. You can just see what states you definitely have, and you can trade back and forth a few, but it's simply, it's two-thirds. That's all there is to it. But then when you say we need four more for ratification,
Looks like we've lost Keith, but we have a caller. Who is the? What's your name, caller? Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
There you go. This is Keith. I'm back in.
Hey, Mushmouse 9. What's your name?
Hey, this is Keith. I said I was
now,
talking
on,
to myself
hold,
there.
Hold on, Keith. Yeah, I had to go and I had to go for a second. I was just letting you go. We got another caller here who has some questions. What's your name, caller?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hello. What's your name?
Mushmouse.
Oh.
I go by Mushmouse.
Okay. Okay, so what's up, Mushmouse?
Did you hear my question earlier?
Well, I did, but you and I were off the air, so I'd like you to repeat your question so everyone can hear it.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. I was just wanted to know, when you were discussing sovereigns, I just tuned in. I wanted
right.
to know whether or not... Hello?
Hello. Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Okay. I wanted to know whether or not you were saying each individual has the right to be sovereign as far as declaration, or are you saying that there's a militia somewhere who wants to be recognized as sovereign, a group who want to be recognized as sovereign to represent the state, as the militia representing the sovereign state. I mean, how are you going about saying this sovereignty thing should be acted out?
Well, every state in the original intent, every state was sovereign unto itself, except for the specific rights or powers. We overuse the word rights here. Governments don't have rights. They have powers. Except for the specific powers ceded to the cooperative of the states,
mm-hmm.
all states were sovereign. How far does that go toward answering your question?
So I'm going to get clarity. When you say they're sovereign, what you're saying, they're sovereign prior to joining the union, as far as declaration of the oath to the federal union, or are you saying that they're sovereign, they don't want to play anymore as far as oaths go to the union, and they're sovereign based upon their constitutional agreement? I mean, how are you going about saying now that they're part of the union, or they're sovereign, and they
okay.
No federal laws govern them? Is that what you're saying?
No federal law governs the state constitutionally outside of those federal laws that are within the powers granted by the states to their federal government. The federal government belongs to the states. Now, what we've done in the last century is we've flipped that around. We flipped that around to where the states now seem to be seen by the federal government as just extensions of the federal government or as provinces of the federal government.
I see.
However, don't you agree?
I agree, but there's a clause in the Constitution that also states that any law that doesn't mimic or isn't in accordance with being written in like me is by law. You understand? I mean, I wouldn't want to get rid of that clause. I don't care if any
I don't understand. I don't understand what you're saying. Say that again now. Start over with that last thing again about a clause in the Constitution.
I believe it's a clause or something to that effect, or it's disguised in the amendment as such, where it says that any law that's not written in accordance with these federal laws is moot by law. And that's also including any ordinances or state statutes that's not federal lawful. You understand? Now, I'll recognize that, but as far as these states making laws that are promulgated without any federal oversight, hell no. Hell no. I mean, what are we trying to say? There's somebody that's sane out there that's eligible not to be voted upon nationally that can lead a state somewhere that I don't know. I don't see how it would work myself. But I do recognize that all states should be solely responsible. See, the problem is that no states can coin money. You see?
Correct.
So
correct.
If you're a sovereign state, how in the hell are you going to make your own money? What are you going to do?
You can't. You cannot because coining money is one of the things, you know, what you're talking about is federal supremacy. The supremacy clause, and I'm paging through my Constitution to find it. I believe it's in Article 6. Okay, here's the clause you're talking about, Mushmouth.
Mm-hmm.
It is in Article 6. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made, under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, what you tend to forget when you go throwing around the supremacy clause is a very, very small four-letter or four-word shall be made in the pursuance thereof. So the only laws, federal laws, that are supreme are laws that are made in pursuance or laws that are allowed to be made by the Constitution itself. And you picked one. You picked one, coining money. So the federal law with respect to coining money or counterfeiting money is supreme to any state law. The federal law, for example, with respect to treaties with foreign countries, the federal law with respect to trade with foreign countries, the federal law with respect to trade between the states, those federal laws are supreme. But federal law is not supreme in education because that is not a power given to the federal government by the Constitution.
Yes, sir. The state.
Now, Dave?
Yes.
I was just going to say the problem is we have two constitutions. We have one that was written that had an intent, and we have a constitution as interpreted for the last 80 years by the Supreme Court, which allows Congress supreme, complete taxing power, and basically allows them their only, the only thing that they have that that limits them is themselves, according to the. And so what we have is an unholy agreement. We have the courts and the Congress working together, and they have in collusion is the word I was looking for. But you basically
courts
have
collusion with Congress. Courts are just not following the law by Congress. Now, how do we?
Let me just take, for example, we have two clauses in the Constitution. We have the General Welfare Clause, and we have the Commerce Clause that were written with what's called exclusive jurisdiction. What I mean by that, if you're married, and I hope that you are because life's a lot easier and more fulfilling if you are, and your wife is yours. That's exclusive jurisdiction, at least under the way that traditional marriage is. She's your wife, you're her husband. That's exclusive jurisdiction because she's not anybody else's. Okay? That's the jurisdiction is exclusive on those two items in the Constitution as written. In other words, if the states, as Dave just pointed out, can spend money, and if they want to spend money on education, can they? Of course they can. Can the federal government? Absolutely not. Take another one. Department of Agriculture. If they want to spend money in a sovereign state on agriculture and having a Department of Agriculture, can they spend money on that? Absolutely. But can the federal government? No. Why not? Because there's exclusive jurisdiction. And there's things that have been the federal government can do, and there's things that they cannot.
can I see for a second? Can I just clean it up a bit? You're the thing that you
Wait a second. Mush Mouse, nobody can hear you. You're breaking up real bad. I don't know. I can only hear like every other word.
I have to call in on the phone. Let me call you back.
Okay, sure. Please do.
All right, okay.
Let me continue, Dave. Just take the Commerce Clause. Commerce Clause is another example of something that's totally not being used. The courts have interpreted it differently, but during the time and historically, the Supreme Court, the Constitution is interpreted historically to mean what the founders meant when they said it. And when they said commerce, they meant shipping. There are some federal agencies, Federal Aviation Administration, absolutely, that's commerce. But health care is not.
Okay, well, what the founders intended with the Commerce Clause, and clearly, it's quite clear when you read the debates at the convention and the debates that went on between the states and the letters that passed back and forth between the actual people who were there,
yeah,
is they were dealing with a problem of states trying to charge duties and tariffs to one another for trade between the states. They were running into problems of who had sovereign jurisdiction in the waterways that adjoined the states or that ran between the states? Who could charge fees to use those waterways? That's what they meant by allowing the federal cooperative to control the trade between the states.
Well, exactly,
right?
But it's yeah, redefined is the problem.
Yes, exactly. It's been totally redefined by courts that have no constitutional power to interpret the Constitution. Is that you again, Mushmouse?
Yes, it is.
All right, you're much better and much more hearable.
Okay.
Go ahead, Keith.
I was just gonna lost my train of thought there, but I said another example. You take a fifth grader who can read the First Amendment, and you ask him to read the first sentence and the first phrase and all that together, and you say, to an advanced fifth grader, and you say, "What does that mean?" And they can tell you. Well, that means that the government is not supposed to have a national religion, and they're not supposed to, you know. Basically, what the First Amendment does is takes religion, religious practice, and speech out of the jurisdiction of the government. That's what it does. What the court has done, it's beginning in 1947 with Everson versus Board of Education, is take and put, you know, a phrase that's never mentioned in the Constitution, separation of church and state, and completely turned it around. So, but my point is, a fifth grader can read, a sixth grader can read the First Amendment and realize what it means. But in the last, you know, since 1947 at least, they've turned it on its head. It's completely upside down.
Well, I've been reading the First Amendment now for over 40 years.
Okay.
And I didn't understand what the hell it meant until probably the last 6 years. And it's not so much that it's the freedom of speech, it's the freedom of the press, it's the freedom of the religion that matters. It's one little word in the First Amendment that no one ever teaches the little fifth grader that he has the right to do, and that's the right to petition. You know what I mean? And as long as that's being ignored, the First Amendment won't matter to nobody. It'll just matter to those that are religious, or getting persecuted by speech, or the other thing that's in it. You know, it only matter in that regard. But it won't matter because it'll never apply to you. It only applies, as it's written in the Constitution, to those that uphold it by oath. You know, teach a little Timmy that. You know, teach a little fifth grader that, and maybe some things will get changing around here. You know, we are talking sovereign, aren't we?
We are. We are. We're talking the sovereignty of the state. Now, I want to get back to your original question about what we mean here specifically, and you have to go back you have to go back to the very beginning. There were 13 states.
They weren't states, they were colonies. If you're talking about the original, they weren't states. Let's call them what they were.
Well, let's just say what a state is. Is England a state? Absolutely. France? Yes. Those are states, and in the truest sense of the definition, even though they were colonies, but they had a little declaration of independence, and they became sovereign states.
Oh, wait a minute. You can't become a sovereign state unless your natives are happy. You understand what I'm saying? So let's not.
There were 13 entities. There were 13 entities, each with a constitution. 13 entities, each governed by their sovereign peoples. Each state had its own laws and rules. Each entity, let's call it an entity, had its own laws and rules. Each entity was coining its own money to some degree. Each entity was forming its own treaties and alliances with other countries and with the Native American tribes. Each entity was determining what its own boundaries were, and something had to give. Each entity, by the way, had a constitution that preceded the constitution of the federal government. Are we all in agreement?
No.
No? Okay, tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me where I'm wrong, because historically, I'm dead right. But you tell me where I'm wrong.
Tell me where it was federal with 13 colonies.
I didn't say it was federal. There were 13 entities.
I think what you're trying to do is build a premise of an origin within the borders of these walls, these
it's
United
not,
States. Now, but the history books don't support the colonies being states. That's the problem.
Okay, I don't care. I've long since stopped calling them states, okay?
Well, then
we're not going to quibble over that. We're not going to quibble over...
Well, then what we have to do is at least be able to read their colony constitutions.
Okay, there were 13
we have to be able to at least
colonies.
Read.
Okay, we can read those. The Commonwealth of Virginia came to
Philadelphia with a constitution. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts came to the convention with a constitution.
Until it signed it, then it became a state. But it wasn't a state while it was a colony.
No, no.
It wasn't a state while it was in negotiations.
I don't care whether it was a state or a colony. It was a colony, okay? It was a commonwealth, in fact. And it had a constitution, just like the state of Missouri has a constitution. We have a constitution. The state of Missouri constitution. The Commonwealth of Virginia constitution came before the federal constitution. Chronologically, all of these 13 colonies, commonwealth, states, entities showed up at Philadelphia with their own sovereign constitutional governments.
Fine.
Okay? Do we agree?
Not necessarily. I mean,
well, then you need to...
What I'm saying is we got the black issue to challenge here. Now, if you don't want to tackle it tonight, that's one thing, but it still has to be challenged. You know, so if I don't agree, please don't think I'm not in agreement with what you're saying historically.
What I'm saying
you know what I mean?
Exactly. All I'm saying is this.
Yes?
The 13 colonies came to Philadelphia as sovereign governments, as 13 sovereign governments. Right?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Okay. They recognized when they got to Philadelphia that there were some things that were tearing them apart.
Uh-huh.
There were some things that they each couldn't do on their own. They each couldn't continue to make sovereign deals with foreign countries. You couldn't have 13 colonies each coining their own money. You couldn't have 13 colonies each deciding to charge tariffs to one another when they traded cotton for textiles. And so they sat down and they said, okay, these are the things that we can't each individually do and get along together on this little strip of land. So let's put together a cooperative of the 13 states to do these 12 things. And this cooperative will have the power over the 13 colonies in these 12 specific areas. Everything else, we maintain our sovereignty at state level. Are we in agreement or disagreement?
Yeah, well, it's all contractually based in any way, unless you could show me where someone, being all contractually based, we'll have to go to the contracts themselves to see what representatives sold you guys out. that's just basically how it goes. You know, then we're still going to have to elect those that in agreement with giving up corporatisms and stuff
that. All I'm doing at this point is answering the very first question you asked when you came here, and that is, what does state sovereignty mean?
No, I understand. I understand.
Okay,
all powers to the state, people of the state, right.
Right.
And then you have a two-pronged problem there, because the states are oathed up too, and the people certainly by definition don't mean the average Joes. So how are we going to divide, or, you know, are we still going to believe in this three-pronged power of government, legislative, judicial, executive, that haven't on record to date practiced any form of what lawful is? How are we going to solve that issue?
Well, now that's what Keith came here talking about. We solve that by the states standing back up to the federal government and
and saying, this is it. We've had it with you. You belong to us. We don't belong. We bore you. You didn't bear us.
I'm in agreement. But if we all shout when the pie is divided, black people seem to end up in the same economic positions that, you know, that don't say we are the people together, you know, even when we say government, get the hell out of here. And I doubt if by numbers, if you're looking at them, a minority certainly cannot stand up and box with gods, you know, just by saying we had enough. It's going to take a more national and a more well-organized unity of colors. And I doubt if you could do it by yourselves because you're profiting from it. How in the hell are you going to say give up your pension, give up your 401k? Certainly you understand that federal support in any monetary means that you are certainly obliged to uphold the rules and laws of by federal standards because you're taking the support. The churches know that.
You've totally lost me. Now, who are we telling to give up their 401k and why?
Why? Because the 401k is not a recognized United States means of monetary exchange. It's just some make-believe thing. Now it's tied into our prison system. And how are you going to break that monopoly up? You know, all those investors that want to get paid, you know, that are bloodthirsty and put their hard-earned money into that system to receive some stock, and they want to get paid. This thing is way past state sovereignty. We're looking at a different animal here.
Yeah, you're definitely looking at a different animal than state sovereignty when you suggest that I give up my 401k. I put my money into my 401k. Did you put money into a 401k?
Well, I played the game for a little bit until the market said you lose 2/3 of it because somebody didn't want to participate, play the game correctly. But when you read the rules, none of them are. So do we really expect to squeeze water from a rock? All of us?
I don't know. Who didn't play the game correctly? I mean,
didn't play it correctly. All the bankers, everybody knows that got their homes taken, didn't play the game correctly, you know, because after they sold the damn title, you know, really, I mean, come on, you know. So, I mean, it's a lot of people lost because they didn't play the game correctly. Sure. The game is rigged.
Okay, so because of that, I should give up my 401k?
Well, I think if you're a true believer in it, and hell no, you should stay in it. And whatever the outcome may be, if you benefit or lose, then you deservedly should face that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But hell no, I wouldn't give it up either.
Yeah. All right. That's fine. No, and I agree with what you're saying about playing the game correctly. I mean, again, and it goes back to the federal government. The biggest problem in this country right now is crony capitalism, is the revolving door or the in-bed status between government and business.
But the 401k is attached to that too. Because while you're receiving a benefit, somebody has to suffer somewhere for this benefit to come through.
No. Nobody suffers for any benefit.
They got articles in the paper all day with Apple people dying in the factories in China because Apple got to meet a quota for the next year. You know, I mean, these things are not hidden.
I don't care. Where Apple does business is up to Apple.
That's the problem. If you're going to say you deserve sovereign here, the world is watching. There's no local news that's going to cover your own little sovereign.
I don't mind China being sovereign. If China wants to take care of their people and make sure Apple doesn't kill them, that's up to China. It isn't up to the United States. It isn't up to me, and it isn't up to you. China gets to be a sovereign country, too. They can either take care of their people or they can't. I mean, it matters not to me.
I can't say I want a piece of the pie and then the hell with the rest of the world. I don't see how that's going to work. I don't see how that's going to say, okay, my state sovereignty supersedes, and by the way, the hell with your dying in the factory. You know, I mean, it's not what, you know.
No, I don't say to hell with your dying in the factory. I say it's none of the United States of America's business what happens in a Chinese factory.
Sure, it's their business. They're the ones who obviously are benefiting in some kind of way. Just because the corporations don't pay taxes, that don't mean that the United States government doesn't benefit in some kind of way from these corporations being across sea. So it is their business.
How does the United States government benefit from Apple being in China?
I don't know. Oh. That. But if we follow the money, I'm sure we'll find out. That's the easy part.
No, that's not the easy part, evidently, because nobody's been able to do it. I mean, you can't tie a benefit to the United States of America from Apple operating in China. I mean, the benefit of the United States of America would be for Apple to be operating.
What do you want,
the United States of America?
Or are you going to protect them? Pick a side now, because I'm confused. You're protecting state sovereignty, but you're arguing for the non-intentional legalities or benefits of the United States. Which one do you want to benefit?
What are you talking about? Now, wait. you've tried to steer the conversation.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
I'm all for state sovereignty. I'm all for
it. I say state sovereignty means I don't give a shit what's happening in China.
Yeah, what about the people, your own native people, though? The ones in the jail cells, though? You see, because they resemble those people in China, and a lot of people don't give a damn about them either. But they're sitting in jails with no crimes on them. They're just sitting in jails. You understand what I mean? Victimless crimes type thing?
Anybody who's sitting in jail who hasn't committed a crime has me on their side.
Okay. Is that how it works in state sovereignty?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about it then.
I have been talking about it. You've been wanting to talk about people dying in China and 401ks. I'm wanting to talk about state sovereignty.
I'm just not naive to not know that somehow, some way, this knot that we have connecting federal and state somehow connects to people across the globe. You know, I'm not naive to not know that. You know what I mean? But
if you
just want to be secularized and not keep the veil of naivety from saying that there's no cause and effect from China all the way back to the United States, then that's cool. And so
I didn't say there's no cause and effect.
Yeah.
You know, when what China does impacts the United States of America, then we have a sovereign right to do something about that.
Okay.
That is in fact a job of the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But Apple operating in a factory in China isn't one of those things.
Apple receives a federal benefit. Of course it's one of our things. Of course it is.
That's a problem. Apple
damn right it's a problem.
Apple receives a federal benefit. That's a problem.
That's right.
It doesn't have anything to do with state sovereignty. It's a problem. But it doesn't have anything to do with what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. I'm just saying it's all connected. That's all I'm saying.
Here's how it's all connected. When the states grab a hold of themselves and lift themselves back up to their rightful place in this nation and say with all the testicle fortitude that they can get, federal government, this is none of your damn business how we educate our kids. It's none of your business what kind of factories we have and whether they burn coal or not. It's none of your business what we do with our roads. It's none of your business what we do with our bridges. It's none of your business what we do with our farms, who we employ, how we employ them. That is the business only of the state of Missouri, We bow to you in the coining of money. We bow to you in your federal supremacy in making treaties with foreign countries. We bow to you in maintaining the interstate highways. We bow to you in all those things. Everything else you stay out of. Then there will be no federal benefits for Apple. Then there will be no 40% tax brackets.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm all for anything new. Why not? I understand, but listen, like I said, if it's everyone inclusive, then it possibly can work. But I'm not naive to know that when it was a historical point in time for things like this to happen, something went terribly wrong. You understand what I mean? Or if it was happening, something went terribly wrong.
I don't understand. What went terribly wrong? What happened? What are you alluding to? Get a little more specific.
Well, when all people that are native to whatever states they're in, all of them, okay. I mean.
Right.
If it's not a one-man, one-vote system, or if it's not give me a receipt for my vote system, then we know that then we're doomed to repeat whatever the feds are doing right now. It's doomed to go that way again because absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? We're not naive to not know this. So being that you're such a big state, you know, advocate, you better damn well be sure that everyone benefits within these states' walls. You understand? You better make sure that your militia doesn't become...
Militia?
Yeah, your state militia. Huh?
What's my militia got to do with anything?
Well, they're part of the state. They're intertwined in the mechanics of the state. Because when you need a bill collector, who do you most likely have to call? When they want to snatch children, who do they call? They call the militia. Everyone knows who they
who's
are.
Who's talking about snatching children?
Oh, I'm just saying, when anyone wants to benefit that works for a state, and they're doing it now, these are not secrets. These are all things that the states do to people who don't have a voice in media, you know, and getting their complaints out. They smother the voice of the average Joes.
How big is your state? How big? Are you in Missouri?
No.
Okay. How big is your... You want to tell me where you are?
In New York.
Okay. How big is your state representative district? Do you know who your state representative is?
No. No. My state
Do you know how many...
Is my you know, is me, is my neighbors, is my friends, is everyone I socialize with. Those are my state representatives.
Okay.
You understand what I mean?
No, I don't. You have a representative. You have a representative in Albany.
Yes. Yeah.
A person who represents you sits in a seat in Albany and
right.
makes the laws for the state of New York.
Right. And getting him to work, even if I know his name, if I call him today, I say, listen, I got an illegal bill here or someone got me in collections. What are you going to do about it? You know what he's going to tell me? Start at square one and work your way up to me.
Why is that?
In order for me to make him work for me, it would take, huh?
Why is that?
Because it's a presumption or an assumption that you are somehow, some way employed by them. You understand what I mean?
No, I don't understand what you mean. Here's what I understand. Wherever you are in New York, there are 100,000 people or less, quite likely less, in your state representative district. What I'm telling you is that is the level where you and 15 other people working on a Saturday afternoon can change the course of an election. That is the level where you have a very small, you have a 100 by 100 square block area. That you have a direct representative from to Albany. That's where you can change the state government. When you care enough to get 30 people out on a Saturday afternoon
to change your state representative in that little bitty area, then you'll see some things change in New York.
How's it working for you, that procedure?
It's working pretty darn good here.
Okay. How did it change the state representative, or did it change the city municipality?
It changed the state representatives. We're changing state representatives in Missouri. We passed a Second Amendment Preservation Act that says the federal government cannot come into the state of Missouri and enforce federal gun laws.
What's Missouri's position on marijuana?
Missouri, currently it's illegal in Missouri. They're working on that.
So how are you an all-inclusive state if you want to get rid of the guns, but I can't smoke a joint?
I didn't say we wanted to get rid of guns. I said they passed a Second Amendment Preservation Act
that forbids
the federal government from coming into the state of Missouri and enforcing federal gun laws.
Yeah, but federal gun laws is not meant to hurt those that got registered guns. It's meant
federal
to hurt
gun laws are illegal. Federal gun laws are unconstitutional.
Yeah, but so is the Patriot Act. So is half the last 10 wars of the United States.
So is Obamacare. So is Obamacare. And I'm answering your question. It makes a difference because here in the state of Missouri, we are standing up to the federal government and we're saying no person in the state of Missouri can be forced by you to buy insurance.
I agree with that now.
Okay.
No, I don't see how they could force you to buy anything.
So
I agree with
what I'm telling you is that if you...
Look at it this way, though. Before we run away with the ball and try to score a goal here, what do you say to all these unions telling their members they can't stop paying dues? That's a state issue, isn't it?
It is a state issue. We're working on that in Missouri. I'm answering your question. When you and 15 people change your representative in Albany, you'll fix the problem.
But presumably...
You keep saying the problem is so big we can't do anything about it.
No, what I'm trying to tell you is the problem is my state, the actors within my municipality. That's what
because
I'm trying to
why?
Get.
Because why?
All the way up to the federal government.
because why?
That's what I'm trying to really say.
Because why? Because the people who live in that little bitty 100 by 100 square block area can't get their butts out on a Saturday afternoon and say, okay, Representative Jones, you're out of here. Here's the guy we want speaking for us in Albany. That's why.
Hey man, it's not like I don't know everyone that goes up to Albany, even with the good intentions of the constituents that sent them up there, doesn't turn something happens to them up there. You understand? They get a bigger, I guess, 401k package.
I don't know what's wrong with you guys in New York, but I can name you 10 right here in Missouri that have been up there for 2 or 3 terms that haven't backed away from what the people sent them up there to do.
And they hate marijuana.
Are you a one-issue man?
I'm a multi-issue man. They hate people who don't commit crimes. They love victimless crimes. They love taxation without representation. They love, what else? You know what I mean? They love warrantless searches. They love searching.
The way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to be in New York, I guess, until you people get out into that little...
Yeah, so why would I want to say to hell with federal laws which guarantees me civil rights protections? I don't understand. Why would I want to do that? Why would I not at least want to have the contract, you know, which I know by historical accounts the state will say to hell with that, and everyone will still be in a big you and little me's perspective within the state walls. Even more constrictive. I mean, goddamn, what's after that? Plantations? We back on those? No. In the manner in which you're speaking, I like my guarantees under the federal protections. I love this country. I love the federal government. You know what I mean? I love them all. I love federal, state, and municipality. when they're in accordance with federal law and the standards of being upholding this republic called the United States.
Fine. I say that's fine. I know tens of thousands of people like you, and I say to you, if that's the way you want it, fix the Constitution, because you can't live the way you're living.
There's no fixing of the Constitution. It's a permanent injunction. If you really want to fix
it, your isn't.
State, if you really want to fix your state, you know what you could do that'll work? You can teach civic practices, teach civic law in your schools. Once you put that back in the schools, then your states will change in a new perspective. But say you want to build the laws and...
What you mean by teach civics in schools is teach socialism in schools, indoctrinate children. Why don't we get back to teaching children? Okay. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Okay, if you want me to believe that the form of socialism you're describing will look like communist China in resemblance, I think we're mistaken. History doesn't support that, you know, in saying that this country will look like communist China, little Vietnam or something. I don't know
Hell you think. You're in New York.
I don't know. Korea.
You're in New York. You're in New York. I'll tell you one thing that history doesn't support up there in New York is you being back on a plantation. New York isn't a plantation state. Never was.
The hell it isn't. The hell it is. They got a black museum in the heart of Manhattan right next to City Hall telling the history of New York City in relationship to slavery. It's a slave port right down the heart of Manhattan called South Street Seaport. That was a slave port. Well documented in history. Everyone knows. It's not a secret. I keep telling you it's not a secret. They're finding burial grounds all around this joint, including every borough within the city. They found the African burial grounds. They found one on City Island. All my life living up in the Bronx, I thought City Island, white people lived up there all their lives. Come to find out there's a black cemetery up there.
Did they grow a lot of cotton up there in New York, did they?
I'm not sure if that was the gross domestic product for that century, but they had something going on. They liked servitude. White people liked their potties being thrown out in the streets or wherever the hell he was putting shit in them days. They liked that.
Okay. Okay, so we can talk about that some other time. I've got a guest waiting for the last hour of the show, so thanks for the call.
They liked the black laws. You know.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Good call.
Have a great night.
You too. You too. That you, Don?
Mike here.
Or Mike, yeah, Mike. How you doing?
Michael Don, yeah, so you're close.
Michael Don, that's right. I knew I'd mess that up. I had it written right down here on this paper, too. So
that's right. My dad was Don, and I have that as a middle name, so
there
you were very close.
Michael Don Slack.
You know, the last caller confused me a bit.
Confused me a lot. Asked a lot of questions and then didn't want to hear the answers.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. I was calling in, Dave, to talk about the Go Green Self-Reliance Festival we have going on in Thayer. I'm hoping you can make it or anybody else within a reasonable drive. Don't know, Thayer is about 20 miles south of West Plains in Oregon County. And we have this festival at our city park by the rodeo arena on June 21 and 22. And this is the sixth festival we've had.
Okay, what I want you to do for the listeners is start real quick and tell us what it is, what the Go Green Self-Reliance Festival is, because the name might confuse people.
Well, actually, it did originally. I'm pretty active with the Property Rights Coalition, and the very first time I met those folks at the Mountain Grove meeting, it was after a Go Green festival. The first one was just called Go Green. Walked in with a T-shirt on, and I think they thought I was Al Gore Jr.
Yeah.
And I am not. Wish I had his Learjet. That's about it.
Yeah.
We added the word self-reliance to try to make it clear that that's what this is about. It's a festival that does promote what I like to call sensible alternative energy. As an example, do-it-yourself solar power is a wonderful thing that can help you get off the grid if you want, or just keep your utility bill down and be ready in case of a problem, disaster, ice storm, whatever. Now, Solyndra proves there's a lot of crooked folks in Washington, okay? So we're not for government-supported solar power. But do it yourself, or at least learning about it and looking at it as an option. Other sensible alternative energies are making moonshine. You can make alcohol legally using a crop in the Ozarks like sweet sorghum and get 1,000 gallons an acre. That's enough gasoline replacement if you have an older vehicle or a flex-fuel vehicle to go for a year without having to go to the gas pumps, spending money on expensive gasoline. Or if you have diesel, you can make your own biodiesel many different ways. One of our speakers will talk about that. He runs his pickup truck on diesel he makes himself, a doctor out of West Plains. And we have a fellow from Springfield named Mike Brown who builds small steam engines, some so small you can hold them in one hand. And he uses those burning wood to make electricity for his home. We have another fellow from Springfield, Doug Breathauer, who has a pickup truck that uses the wood gas system and runs on firewood. And an MSU professor, Jim Hart from West Plains, who's bringing a generator that runs on wood gas also, the same system. And we have a lot of wood in our area. Most people have wood stoves. And, you know, if gasoline suddenly jumped to $5, $10 a gallon, this is an alternative that folks around here could use. We also really believe in self-reliance, raising your own food, avoiding genetically modified, genetically engineered foods, using heirloom seeds. And in the Ozarks, you know, we have a lot of good family-owned companies that make heirloom seeds, like Baker's Creek, White Harvest in Hartville. Mike Knox there will be out with us. And then our neighbors in the Arkansas Ozarks have down-to-earth seeds and Hickory Ridge seeds that will be there. We have Hollister, Missouri resident, Lynette Pate, who is an organic guru, who will be talking about the best ways to make an organic garden and some of the reasons why you want to do that and avoid GMOs. We have another lady who will be talking about foods that heal. Her name is Robin Gilbert. Dawn McPherson, who lives in Thayer, is an herbalist. She will tell you how to make some homemade medicines if there is no doctor available. You know, I learned from her that oregano and raw honey and garlic are all natural antibiotics. And she'll be giving a very, very long lecture and giving out handouts and helping people make their own tonics if they'd like. Coming from, I believe, Iowa is Bob Gaskin from Black Dog Survival School. Now, Bob is really well known around the country as a survival expert, and he's going to talk about handling emergencies yourself. And on Saturday, and then on Sunday, he's going to talk about taking care of your pets during disasters. For instance, you know, during Hurricane Katrina, a lot of folks left their dogs and cats behind. He said that's not necessary. He'll tell folks how to avoid it, how to take care of their animals. A big part of it also is supporting our local economy. So we've invited all area businesses to come out and set up, and some of our farmers and gardeners to come out with produce to sell. I know we have a couple of local nonprofits. The Ranger at Girls will be out there doing a bake sale. A couple of our churches come out and do fundraisers. And, you know, it's just a chance to get to know a lot of your neighbors, help them out, circulate money in our local economy so that it circulates, what, 8, 10, 12 times, rather than going down to Bentonville and over to China. So, and we have food vendors. I know we have one fellow, Uncle Charlie, he fries everything. He has fried Oreos, fried Twinkies, fried peanut butters.
Does he use lard?
Fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. He has a coffee-flavored funnel cake. You know, I try that.
Ooh.
And some other folks that have, you know, all kinds of interesting foods. The chief of police in Willow Springs, Missouri, is coming. I didn't know that he was a barbecue expert, and he does smoked meats. So I'm gonna try a brisket sandwich Saturday that he'll make. And then we have local musicians. doing live music all day, both days. This area, and again, I didn't realize it until I moved here a few years ago, but the Grand Ole Opry was really formed because a man named George D. Hay, a newspaper reporter, came to this area, Thayer and Mammoth Springs, and heard bluegrass music for the first time. And he became fascinated by it. He went back to Tennessee, and he created the Grand Ole Opry.
Huh.
And, you know, pretty nifty heritage for the Ozarks that I wasn't even
aware
of. Yeah. And,
so
you know,
this
we
is
have
a...
games for the kids, and one of the most popular ones is called Money in a Hay Bale. We stick $50 worth of coins in a couple of bales of hay and let these kids tear the hay apart and keep the money they find. And that's a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it being, you know, a local activity, we have a grocery store that donates the hay. We have some banks that donate the $50 worth of coins. And, oh, and we also have the local animal shelter out there with some dogs and cats that need adopted. And our local veterinarians are very good at sponsoring that. So, you know, I don't think you can come here and not find something you're going to enjoy and something you're going to learn from.
How big is Thayer? If someone wanted to come, say from St. Joe, where would they stay?
Well, you know, our local motels really support this a lot too. The Comfort Green Motel and the River View both offer special rates for folks who are coming to go green. You can find them on Google. If you call the Comfort Green, the manager there, his name is Z. He sounds like Jesse Ventura, I swear. When you talk to him, you'd think it was Jesse. But they're big supporters. And I know his motel has a discount rate, and then they offer free breakfast the next day.
Yeah.
At a restaurant that sits right on the state line. The parking lot is in Arkansas. The restaurant itself is in Missouri. And that's kind of neat. We also have a lot of camping facilities, including in our city park in Thayer. And a lot of our vendors bring their campers, and they just spend the night there.
Okay.
And Thayer only has a little over 2,000 people in population. And we've been averaging about 3,000 people attending the festival, so...
Wow.
We must be getting some out-of-towners in there somewhere.
I'd say. So this is a pretty big deal for the folks in and around Thayer.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. Helps out the town. And, you know, one thing I always encourage people from elsewhere, too, is look at what we're doing. It's easy to duplicate. And it's a good way to get your community active. You know, if we ever do have a disaster, you know, think about Joplin with the tornado or...
Right.
New Orleans with the hurricane. You need to know your neighbors. And you need to know who has skills that you don't have so you can help each other. And this is a way of finding them. And, so we encourage everybody to come out.
Well, okay. I tell you what. I'm hoping I'm not going to make it this year. This came to my attention too late to make it onto the calendar, but what I want you to do is, for next year's, I want you to be on here a heck of a lot earlier than the week before. I'm going to get it on my calendar for next year as soon as you guys set a date. And I'm going to make it down to that thing. I want to find out how to run my car on sorghum.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
You know, the nice thing about doing that, too, if you have an acre to plant in sweet sorghum, is you'll get about 1,000 gallons, according to a lot of figures with good soil, of alcohol. And your byproduct is a high-protein animal feed because you turn the carbohydrates into alcohol.
Oh.
So it's dried distiller's grain.
Yeah.
And that's what I fed my cattle and hogs for a while. And, you know, it's actually better quality than some of the feed you could buy. Low-carb by protein.
Is there anything, I mean, do you have some secret or is there a solar panel on the market that is cost-effective for me? I mean, I've looked at solar panels, Mike, and I can't find anything that saves me, quite literally, saves me enough money to even think about buying it.
I have been told by friends who work in the business that the cost are going down almost every month on solar panels. And so it depends on where you buy them. I'd recommend talking to one of the experts. You know, you may know Bob Parker.
I do know Bob.
Texas County. And Bob is working right now with a company in Houston that does solar energy. You know, so he would be a good guy to talk to. Or I know there's a solar power company also in Seymour, Missouri, right on 60 Highway. And these are all good local companies. And I just go in there or give them a call and talk to them.
Yeah,
their business to stay current.
It's been some years since I looked into it. And you know, I mean, I know.
I know several years ago it was really expensive, but just keeps getting cheaper all the time.
Well, yeah.
No.
I might look at that again someday and see what I can do about that. You know, I mean, I know we have ample sunshine here in Southwest Missouri. If I could just find the technology to do it, I would certainly be interested in doing something like that myself. Okay.
You know, another option there is we have a local fella who's an inventor, and he has a pedal-powered PTO. It's very easy to use, and you can actually pedal on this thing for about an hour and charge several car batteries.
Huh.
And, you know, you're getting your exercise as well as getting your electricity.
Yeah.
And it's pretty reasonably priced, so lots of great things there.
I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it down there to that one. I'm really, really interested in this thing. Tell us how to get to Thayer now from
let's assume you're in West Plains. Most people don't get there.
Yeah.
Get on 63 Highway, go 20 miles south.
Okay.
Thayer has two stoplights. The first one you'll see is the McDonald's. The second one has a Dairy Queen. You'll turn left at that stoplight where the Dairy Queen is. And as soon as you head down 63, you're going to see signs all over the place announcing the festival. So
okay.
If you get lost, follow the signs.
So south out of West Plains on
63
to the second stoplight once you enter Thayer and go left.
Turn left, yes.
Okay.
And that's less than a mile from the Arkansas border.
Okay.
So if you hit Arkansas, you've gone too far, turn around, come back.
How far from West Plains to Thayer?
About 20 miles.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Okay, I will be seeing you down there next year for sure, and hopefully you and I will meet again sometime between now and then. We'll definitely.
As soon as we get our dates set, I'll give you a call.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if anybody wants more information, they can call me at 417-264-2435.
264-2435. That's Michael Don Slack or Mike Slack. And you call in here anytime and let us know how things are going down there. I know Mike from having – I've never met him. I've talked to him several times on the phone over the last year or so. I know aside from this thing that he is a solid states' rights patriot, and we appreciate him. How's the politics down there in southeast Missouri?
I'm in a county that tends to vote for more conservative candidates for federal office. We have, of course, a conservative Republican congressman. Locally, they've been Democrats here since the Civil War. But every county around us is kind of the exact opposite. I think this was a Confederate county surrounded by the Union.
Right.
But the important thing is with the groups that I work with, the Property Rights Coalition, both in Thayer and in Mountain Grove, and the Campaign for Liberty in West Plains, we're staying active. We're trying to get the truth out about the so-called right to farm bill that's coming up.
Exactly.
We worked pretty hard fighting the Blue Way when that was, and the Ozark Scenic Riverway's new rules were
good.
We're wanting more local control, less federal. And, you know, people here want smaller government in general.
Yes.
And Yeah, they're Americans. They want to be left alone. We're all a little bit disappointed that the Second Amendment Preservation Act could not be passed. We were promoting a direct trade from farmer to consumer bill.
Right.
That did not get out of committee, apparently. And we're hoping for better next session.
Okay.
And by the way, our Senator Mike Cunningham, I understand, will be at Go Green, so folks can visit with him.
Good.
And I've invited Lieutenant Governor Kinder. I'm hoping he'll come down.
Well,
no.
I'm looks like a great weather weekend.
Should be good. And well, I'm sorry we're going to miss you this year, but hopefully next year you will be.
Okay.
And I'll keep you posted on everything else we have going on.
Do you have an online presence for this thing at all?
Unfortunately, the only thing we have right now is a Facebook.
Okay.
Just not enough hours in the day. But Facebook, Go Green Festival Ozarks on Facebook. Hey, by the way, I should mention to your colleagues in talk radio, Mike Evans with America's Voice Now will be one of our speakers, and John Moore, the Liberty Man, will be there. And John has a lot of listeners in this area. I didn't even realize it until we booked him. And got a fellow named Owen Stroyer with a show out of St. Louis is coming down to do a live broadcast, so. You know, I'm looking forward to those.
Okay, so it's 417-264-2435 to talk to Mike Slack about the Go Green Self-Reliance Festival. That's in Thayer, Missouri.
West Plains.
I keep wanting to say Waynesville. Go to West Plains, go south on 63, and turn left at the Dairy Queen stoplight, the second stoplight in Thayer. Say that again now. Go Green Ozarks on Facebook.
Go Green Festival Ozarks.
Go Facebook. Green Festival Ozarks on Facebook. And you know what? I'd like you to call back in just at your convenience in here in 3 or 4 weeks. Let us know how that all went.
We'll definitely do it.
Okay. And be a regular, Mike.
We'll do that, too. I'll try not to be as confusing as the last caller was.
Couldn't happen.
Okay. Well,
great
take
talking
care,
to you, Mike. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, my friend. Okay. Somewhere along there, we lost Keith, too. He might have just got tired of the conversation and dropped out. It was a little bit interesting. So that's it, folks. We'll have Mike Moon back next week. Lisa Payne Nager will be along on Wednesday night with the Culture Vigilante, as always. Cynthia Davis will be along on Tuesday night with Homefront. I'll be back tomorrow night and then again next Friday. Hopefully we'll have Mike Moon with us next Friday. He'll give us a rundown on what's happened in Indianapolis. And we'll talk a little bit more about these things that are going on in Jefferson City. There's going to be a veto override session. We'll be looking forward to that. We'll be talking some about this right to farm bill. We'll be talking about the sales tax increase that they're asking you to pass in August. We'll be talking, of course, then and forever about what is the function of government. We have a local talk show host here who comes on at least weekly, sometimes daily, saying this is a function of government, this isn't a function of government, as though function of government is a term that you pull out of Webster's or Encyclopedia Britannica without any rhyme or reason or relation to the actual constitution of the state of Missouri. We're going to talk about that in detail in the next couple of weeks. I'm also going to get my friend Lloyd Thomas Sloan back on. Very interesting question I'd like you to think about in the next week or two. Was floating around on his Facebook page. It garnered a wee little bit of philosophical pondering, but the question actually was quite deep. And I've thought about it for a couple of weeks, and I'm ready to tackle it.
Is there a conflict? Now think about this for a couple of weeks. Is there a conflict between liberty and equality? Is there a conflict between liberty and equality? This is some of the things that people don't think deeply about when they start chasing rabbits the way Mushmouse did earlier. Just think about that. Is there a conflict between liberty and equality? So I'll be back tomorrow night. And don't forget, you folks in Lawrence County, Mike Moon's meet and greet in Aurora on Thursday night. Please, 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 let's get a huge crowd out there for this thing. And then each person there needs to take away a commitment to talk to 10 to 15 other people after the meeting. It's important. It is probably the most important election in my mind this August. Not so important because Mike Moon, in and of himself, can turn the tide in Jefferson City. Important because of the message. The message. If you're a Republican and you want to send the message that you're taking your party back, that fight is right there in Lawrence County. See you in Aurora Thursday night. And I'll see you back here next Friday.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I